It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The spread of the Ebola virus is the latest news issue receiving widespread coverage. From the Y2K panic, remember that, to killer bees and more, pop culture contributor Joe Woese joins us to discuss the history of public panic and hysteria. Joe Woese, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. How
Always
are you?
It's great to be here. Thanks.
We have nothing to fear but fear itself, that and killer bees.
Yes, that's very true.
Not sure to whom we should attribute that exact quote, but
that's one of mine.
What is the killer bee thing?
Well, this was something really big. I grew up in the 70s, and there was a lot of panics in the 70s, but one was this absolute hysteria that the killer bees were coming. The killer bees were coming.
You weren't confusing this with the Saturday Night Live sketch?
It was parody. It became the basis for a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Okay.
And it became the basis for several movies. And it also – and the newspapers just played it up. The media played it up. They were tracking the killer bees as they came up from Africa. And they never quite made it to Pittsburgh. They did make it to areas like Texas and throughout the South. And turns out the threat we thought they were – not quite as bad, and definitely not quite as bad. But there was an absolute hysteria and panic that these killer bees were coming, and there was no way to stop them.
Did any of them look like Joanna Frank, the queen bee in the Outer Limits episode?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well then we don't need to talk any more about it. What are some early examples, though, of mass hysteria in the United States?
I think the first really big example in the United States is the frenzy over witches. You know, the Salem witch hunts that were happening. That there was this great, just tremendous paranoia that grew into hysteria to the point where people were really believing that these people were practicing witchcraft and that they were seeing evil acts of them raising people from the dead. And they got caught up in it, and they started to sort of see what they wanted to see.
And this was going back to Salem, Massachusetts,
this is going
in
back
the 1600s.
Salem, Massachusetts in the 1600s.
So where did that start? What was the thing that made people think that there were witches walking among us?
You know, we have a sort of general paranoia and distrust that is innate to us. We're very distrustful of anyone or anything different. And we also there are people who will use this paranoia to exert control, that they're able to politicize the issue and pass legislations or encourage people to follow them. I can save you from this scare. I can save you from these witches. And so that's really what it became about, as people began taking leadership roles by politicizing this as being the only one who could save them and protect them.
And some of the modern panics?
Yeah, I think you see that same theme with the Red Scare.
So going back to McCarthyism. And explain what that is.
You know, so there was this threat of communism invading America.
And that came from where? That was the post-war paranoia about the Soviet Union and the United States were the two superpowers left, and the Soviets were communists, and they wanted to dominate us, correct?
Yes, and we were choosing up sides. You know, it was democracy versus communism, and they were going to infiltrate our society, and they were going to do it in so many different ways. Any new thing that came up was a communist plot. You know, so there's this constant fear.
Well, the movies, mass media was feared as the way, and it was the supposed, according to the McCarthyites, and McCarthy was a senator from Wisconsin, Joe McCarthy, who, as you alluded to, was one of those who decided, hey, here's a chance for me to exploit fear and use it to my political advantage. So
yep.
he accused people like Edward R. Murrow, an esteemed journalist, of being a communist. He accused the leader of the Jackal Pack, I think were the exact words that McCarthy used to describe Murrow. And in the movies too, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, pop culture was a huge target for him because this was seen by everyone. And he saw it, as many did, as being extremely influential. And it was influencing, affecting the minds of our youth and our adults. So film, you know, the rise of television, going into start, you know, as we talk about rock and roll. You know, there was a lot of hysteria around that, and still connected to this idea of corrupting youth as their minds. It was going to lead them down this path, and then that was also going to lead to communist activity. They attached communist activity to everything. It was, you know, drug use was going to lead their way into communist activity. Music was going to lead the way into communist activity. Jazz was a heavy target.
Basically, if it's fun, you know, you're a social, you're a Bolshevik.
If it's fun, we need to find a way to regulate it and control it.
And so, and part of that, and part of the means that was used to control this so-called spread of this dangerous, quote unquote, dangerous thing known as communism was the blacklist, right?
Yes, yes.
So talk about some of the people that, or some of the ways in which the blacklist was used to intimidate people in Hollywood and elsewhere.
Well, it could shut down a studio if you didn't name names. And naming names meant you would give them a list, you know, to McCarthy and his people. They would give a list saying, I think all these people are communist. And they would just hand that list over, and those people wouldn't find work.
Based on innuendo, no proof
based on
necessarily.
Innuendo, and very often based on personal vendettas. If you had, you know, a grudge against someone in Hollywood, you didn't like their contracts, you didn't, you know, like them personally, you added them to that list and you said they're a communist. And that was it. They'd never work again.
And you would think that we would learn from history, but there are certain themes that seem to recur in the public fervor of fear, aren't there?
Yes. I think the one, as we talked about, sort of that enemy within, the Red Scare, the witch trials, Japanese internments, you know, this idea of we can't trust, quote, quote, them. It's the enemy within. You know, others, nature, shark attacks, killer bees, these things that rise up.
Sharknado.
Did
we have Sharknado
really paranoia. And then there's ones that are the out of this world ones. You know, a meteor is headed to Earth. UFO panic. You know, in the 50s and 60s. And then one that has always been the one that attacks pop culture most is that destroying the minds of our youth. You know, rock and roll, video games, comic books are all things that we thought this is going to destroy the minds of our youth. And then, you know.
And weren't comic books also under investigation as they were seen as a cause of juvenile delinquency?
Yes, they really were. And you had, you know, just like as you did with rock and roll, these mass burnings of comic books. And so powerful was it that they passed actual acts that comics were censored. You weren't allowed to show a gun on the cover. You weren't allowed to show overt sexuality. You weren't allowed to show, you know, zombies were considered taboo. And it was a direct reaction to comics getting, you know, very, very popular. And they were graphic in telling these stories that were viewed as, you know, harmful to children, that this was somehow going to damage their minds. And so you had this crackdown that just really hurt the comics industry for a very, very long time.
We're talking with our pop culture contributor, Joe Woes, about the history of public panic and hysteria. The media is often – mass media is often demonized in all of this. But how much does the media, not to exonerate radio and television and the movies, how much does all of that play in the spreading of the panic?
You know, media plays a great role in this and has for a long time. I think a great example is even today we think about War of the Worlds, and we view that – as this media invention that caused panic. The actual panic wasn't caused by War of the Worlds itself. It was caused by the newspapers in the following days and weeks that said, this is an example of how harmful radio is. Radio can't be trusted. The newspapers really played up how many suicides there were and people panicking in the streets. They really played that up to their benefit. And that has continued on. The more people watching TV, more people reading the papers, you know, the more ad revenue, you know, the better the ratings for them. So it really plays to their benefit anytime there is a panic that they can still say, look, we're giving you the news, but how much of it is really news and how much of it is to some extent exaggerated?
So there's a political benefit, but there's also an economic benefit as well. I mean, but let's face it, the War of the Worlds made Orson Welles certainly catapulted his career onto Hollywood, and the newspapers that were making money reporting it, I mean, they were laughing all the way to the bank.
They were making money, and it's not just the media that makes money. It is, you know, the antivirus software. when Y2K was coming out, the updates you needed to buy and purchase. Every time there's a scare, great examples in 1950s and 60s especially, when people were stocking up on canned goods for the impending nuclear holocaust.
Building the underground shelters.
Yeah, and it works on smaller levels too. Every time we say Snowmageddon or anything with a geddon in it, we rush out to buy toilet paper.
What about the Ebola scare? I believe it was Tom Baudet on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend on WESA saying, I don't think Wolf Blitzer's taken a breath since the Ebola panic started the way CNN's been covering.
And it's the way they did this with mad cow. Mad cow, they did this with the bird flu, with SARS. This happens again and again and again, and we see the media, especially in contemporary times, really play it up.
So as we wrap this up, what is the historical lesson we should take away from all of this?
We need to take these things seriously. We need to address them when they come up. We've known about Ebola for some time happening in Africa, and we've chosen to ignore it until it comes to the United States, until it affects us. So we need to take them seriously, but we also need to calm down, not panic, look at the issue, how do we address it, and not worry that it's going to destroy our entire way of life.
Keep calm and carry on. Advice from Joe Woese, our culture contributor. As always, thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thanks again.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.